The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. When Judas had left them, Jesus said, "Now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will also glorify him in himself, and God will glorify him at once. My children, I will be with you only a little while longer. I give you a new commandment. Love one another. As I have loved you, so you also should love one another. This is how all will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." The Gospel of the Lord. Good morning, everyone. It's great to be back with you here at the 8 o'clock Mass. I felt like I haven't been with this crowd for a little bit. And we continue to rejoice in the great wonder of the Easter season as we enter into the fifth week of Easter, the fifth Sunday of Easter is today. And if you noticed, last Sunday and this Sunday, we're kind of hearing stories in our gospel from things that happened prior to the crucifixion, death, and resurrection of Jesus, because, of course, today in this gospel, Judas is still in the picture, right? And we know that this is a story here that shows that Jesus is preparing his disciples for what will be the completion of his mission, so to speak, here on earth. He says, "I will be with you a little while longer," but he gives a commandment. And if you listen closely, Jesus says, "I give you a new commandment." And of course, the commandment is boiled down to just one word, and that word is love, right? To love. Now, if we're really honest with ourselves, or if we really think about this on a broader level, it's hard to think that Jesus was saying something new to his disciples when he told them to love. I mean, of course, we look through the Hebrew scriptures, through our Old Testament, and love shows up a lot, right? We understand that a loving God is what created the world, and we know through the commandments that we are to love our neighbor by being good to them, by treating them justly. And of course, the great sign of what we're called to do, the greatest commandments, is given in the book of Deuteronomy, when it's said that we are to love God with our whole mind, with our whole being, with all of our strength. That's the greatest commandments. And Jesus often will quote that too as being the greatest commandment. So when he says that I give you something new, a new commandment to love, what is he talking about? Because clearly everyone knew that God was loving and that we are called to love God. But Jesus makes it very clear as to what the newness of this commandment is all about when he says, "You are to love one another as I love you. As I have loved you, so you also should love one another." So now, the model of love and the commandments of love is now the way that Jesus loves. That's the new standard. And if we know the way that Jesus loves, we could say that Jesus loves in a very disinterested way. This is a word that St. Francis de Sales would say, that it's important to love in a disinterested way because that's how Jesus loves. What exactly does it mean to love in a disinterested way? Well, it's simply to look at what Jesus does through his passion, death, and resurrection. St. Paul is very good in explaining this to us, that Jesus dies for us sinners, meaning that he pours out the love to us who have no ability to actually adequately love in return. Meaning that Jesus gets nothing out of the deal. He cannot receive anything back from what he does on the cross. Now let's think about that, because if that's how we're called to love in a disinterested way, meaning that we are to just love people and not expect anything in return, we have to ask ourselves basically two questions. The first question is, why should I do that? And the second question, is it possible to do that? So let's unpack the first question. Why should I do that? Why should I love in a disinterested way, in a way where I'm not going to get anything back? Well, on the face value, it seems to be counterintuitive to how we're called as human beings to be relational, to be communal. We know that we enter into friendships, we enter into relationships, because we expect to grow from them in some way, shape, or form, meaning that we receive something from those relationships. I think all of us have friendships where we appreciate them because we receive a lot from them. And that's probably what motivates us to continue to love, because we know we get a lot out of it. Clearly, that seems to be what we do when we enter into relationships with people, that we are receiving something. Yet, to love means that we cannot just stop with people that we somehow like. We cannot just stop with people who we think that we're getting a lot out of. And why is that? Well, because there's lots of other people in the world, right? And if we're honest with ourselves, it's usually the people who annoy us the most, or the people who frustrate us the most, or the people who disappoint us the most, are the ones that we spend much of our time really influenced by. I was thinking about this past week, you know, is just reflecting upon just what's happening in our church and what's happening in our country and our world. There is just so much polarization on so many different levels. And it's just so easy to be brought into trying to figure out, what side are you on? You know, and even if you want to hold to a very virtuous, objectively good position on something, you still are often just driven by the opposition. The opposition seems to have a hold on us. The people who annoy us the most have a hold on us. In short, our enemies own us. And they can motivate us to just obsessively think about, like, why do they do what they do? Why are they just seem to be so messed up? And of course, it's one thing to think about that, like, on a very maybe distant level, just like if we turn on TV and we look at people who annoy us. But we know that it's far more painful when it's people in our own family or people that we consider friends who do things that just drive us crazy. And we let those things just fester in our minds so much. So why should we love in a disinterested way? Because it'd be a way to break the hold that people who are unloving or seem to be unloving, or people who we are just not drawn to for whatever reason, it can break the hold that those people have on us. Because we don't allow them to define us. We don't allow them to just drive us crazy. Now, the second question is it possible to love people who are just basically unlovable, at least from our estimation? Well, the short answer is no, it's not possible. It's simply not possible to love people who just drive us crazy or who we just fundamentally disagree with on whatever level. It's impossible to love people who just don't want to love us or want to love anyone else, it seems. Is it really possible to love the most heinous criminal or the person who wants to use violence at every turn? Is it possible? No, it's not. So how do we follow through on Jesus' command to love the way that he loves? There's only one way to do it. We have to give up thinking that we can do it on our own. We have to give up thinking that somehow we have the ability on our own to love the way that Jesus loves. I spend many hours in the confessional, and I'm very blessed to spend many hours here at St. Joseph's. And I think the common thing I pick up in confessions is that people are always struggling to try to live a good Christian life. That's the reason why they're in confession. And they seem to put the burden of Christian living on them. Like, I just got to work harder. I just got to, you know, be nicer. I just got to be kinder. I just got to, you know, stop being so jealous. I got to do... And the reality is that, like, that's not the good news that Jesus gives us. He just doesn't give us a game plan that we have to kind of execute. The good news of Jesus Christ is that he says to us, it's not about us mustering up the strength and the ability to live these good Christian virtuous lives. It's about having the ability to say, I give up. And Jesus, I give you permission now to work through me. Because when we think that we are accomplishing virtue, well, we're just actually falling into the sin of pride. Thinking that we, with our own strength and our own ability, can actually do the work of God to love perfectly. Now, granted, discipline and being proactive are very good things in the spiritual life. We have to at least show up for things like church. We have to show up at least for prayer. Yet, at the very essence of why we even show up is ultimately to lay down, to give up. Think about when you walk into this church and how much focus is placed on the crucifix and how much focus is placed on the Eucharist. And if you look at both of those things, just visually, you see nothing but utter vulnerability. On the crucifix, we believe that is God, Jesus, the Son of God, the second person of the Trinity. There's no more vulnerable impression of God than that. A man dead on a cross. Naked, humiliated, mocked on a cross. This is no Superman God that we see on the crucifix. And then we come and we receive the Eucharist. And how does Jesus give us the Eucharist? Through a very, very vulnerable element of bread and wine. So much so that it's easy to just drop the host onto the floor. So easy that it's just possible to just tip the chalice over and it spills. The Eucharist shows how vulnerable God continues to be in our midst. And what we do at this Mass, of course, is representing what happens at the cross. Meaning that once again, the vulnerability of Jesus shows up, so to speak. is given to us. But it's not just given to us as something that we see. It's given to us for us to receive in order to become. In order to become vulnerable. We receive the vulnerability of Jesus in the Eucharist so that we become the same vulnerability. And it's only at that point that we even have the capacity to love the way that Jesus loves. It's as simple as that. We spend a lot of time and effort trying to think, what must I do? What must I read? How am I supposed to structure my prayer? How am I supposed to muster up the strength to be the best person to people? It's all about giving Jesus permission to work through a very vulnerable vessel, meaning us. And at that point, then we're able to see the way Jesus sees, to hear the way Jesus hears, to forgive the way Jesus forgives, to love the way Jesus loves. And do you know who Jesus loves? He loves every single person who exists. And that means the person who's driving you crazy, who you have in your mind all the time, who just has a hold on you, the person who's so unjust, so immoral, so criminal, so heinous. Jesus loves that person the exact same way he loves you, who are thought to be, at least in your mind, to be so upstanding and virtuous, right? Jesus loves every single person. We don't. But we can when we allow Jesus to work through our vulnerable selves. I think that you will find that life is a lot easier to live when you get to this point. There will be a freedom because you will not be obsessing about why things aren't right or what must I do to make things right. You come to a place of realizing I'm a participant in this great mystery called life. And the more vulnerable I become, the more sign and means of God's love I can be in the world. And that is what a broken, polarized world desperately needs. Jesus says to us, "This is how all will know that you are my disciples. If you love one another." If we want to be a sign of love in a very broken world, let us become what we eat today. The vulnerability of God, Jesus Christ, in the Eucharist. And let us be thankful for that great gift. May God bless you all.